Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show. Garrett Lell and Matt Dahl of ARPG in balmy Las Vegas, Nevada. What'd you say? About 58 degrees out there yesterday, you said?
Balmy, I wish. It was like 58 yesterday. It's supposed to be a little warmer today, but man, Cinco de Mayo, I took my son to a birthday party at a park. It was 56 degrees on May 5th in Las Vegas. I was like, am I in Las Vegas or am I in Iowa? You know?
Seriously.
Hey, we'll take it because we know in about 30 days, 45 days, we're going to be cooking eggs out on the sidewalk.
We had our first ever pre-production meeting yesterday. I think that was nice to kind of touch base a little bit and get some notes together for this thing. So in the last couple of weeks, we've had a big earnings season, better than expected earnings. And I know you talked a lot about guidance as well yesterday. Interest rates are a little bit above that 4.35 mark. It was sort of a technical ceiling for a while. If rates broke through that, that was a really negative sign for equities. And equities are still moving in line there. So as rates go up, equities go down and vice versa. But we're above that 4.35 mark and still sitting at a pretty high level, close to all-time highs on the equity markets. It seems like the overall economic landscape's winning that tug of war.
That's exactly it. So prior to March 28th, right, we had 4.20 on the 10-year. Okay. We had 52.54 closing on the S&P. That was the high. And that we spoke specifically about 4.35. If it gets above that, the market's going to have it's going to get some indigestion. It's going to start to chop around. It's going to get volatile. It will likely pull back. Who knows? It could be 4%, 5%, 7%. It depends on how far off those yields sell, depending on the data that the bond market receives. But counter to that is earnings. Okay. So what took place? So interest rates went from 4.20 to basically 4.60 inside of 7-8 days. Okay. Immediately the market pulled back. And again, we think we probably had a local, what they call a local low on April 19th, kind of right on schedule, right just at 5% on the S&P, a little bit under actually, and about 7% on the NASDAQ. Okay. Then what changed? But what data came in subsequent to that? Earnings. Okay. Now there's a whole new set of data that has come in subsequent to that April 19th low and that 4.72 on the 10-year. So now we're back to 4.50 today, okay? And the market is basically within a half of a percent of its closing high at 52.54. It's at 52.25, 52.30 today. The market keeps punching that ceiling. If you weight it from an interest rate perspective, the market keeps going higher and higher and higher because we've never been 52.25, 52.30 at 4.50 on the 10-year. We've never been here before. What this does is we're starting to pack the bomb, right? Mm-hmm. What ingredients are we packing? We're packing it with good earnings and we're packing it with high interest rates that are starting to cool. Okay. This is a good mix. This is a really, really good mix. And the other thing is it's testament to the economic side and earnings taking precedent when push comes to shove and it's head to head. Earnings matter. Earnings matter, earnings matter. Because, yeah, we can live with a higher interest rate if earnings are there and the guidance is there and we can trust our guidance, which, you know, we talk about this a lot, then the market's going to respond. And it can live with the higher rate. Don't get me wrong. It will also provide a bit of a headwind. It won't allow the market to go absolutely bonkers, but it will give the market the tailwind that it needs, you know. And we're starting to see friendly market green shoots pop up all over the place, right? I'm not saying it's 2021 all over again, okay? But it's looking like 2019 in a lot of ways, okay? Zeekr, that Chinese electric car company, I believe it is, or technology company, they IPO'd today. It's a huge IPO, okay? And it's up 28% in initial trading, okay? IPOs you see in good market times, okay? The reason is it's cost of capital, right? So in 2022, there was no IPOs, right? In 2023, there was very few because if these companies went to market, they're going to get a very low valuation on their company, right? Interest rates are high and increasing. Obviously, that's going to put a cap on what the share price can be. So when the what they call the IPO, the initial public offering price, is the capital that the company receives. Okay. That's how IPOs work. Okay. That's the only time the company gets the money on the equity side of the markets during the IPO process. So whatever it's whatever the issue price is what the company gets. So if we're in a poor economy with high interest rates and low earnings, and the market's trading at 12 times earnings, a company today like Zeekr, which I think debuted around $22, $23, might debut in a bad, poor market time of $12. That's a massive change of capital to the company. So you're only going to see companies, typically large companies with, you know, robust IPO numbers, issue themselves when in a friendly market environment. And that was pretty encouraging to see. Not only was it encouraging for them to do it, it was encouraging for, it was a Chinese company. So Chinese, you know, the Chinese, they realize now they need their stock market. So that's actually good for the whole world. Okay. But it traded higher. So I look at these things as I think is again, it's the equity side saying, okay, I think interest rates going forward are going to be friendly, more friendly than they are now. Not, maybe not friendly, friendly, like they were, you know, for 10 years, but friendlier, right? Friendlier than a 4.85 2-year and a 4.5 and 4.7 10-year and a 5.5% upper bound on the policy rate. So these are good things.
Let's recap earnings season a little bit, because I know we've kind of hit on earnings a little bit one by one as they've come. But as a whole, what's the report card on earnings and also guidance, which I know is even more important at this point?
It's great. We are looking at, I need to do a little bit more homework on the guidance side, but we've got 92% of S&P reporting Q1 and 81% have beat their estimates. Normally that number's around 70 to 71. And the surprise has been 7.6%. I mean, 88% defensives have beat. 73% of near cyclicals have beat. 82% of cyclicals have beat. The defensives have actually beat by 9.3%, which is the highest. So in that space, you've got healthcare, consumer staples, and utilities. So, I mean, we've got a surprise of 11.3% on utilities. And I wanted to touch on utilities because utilities are basically going back there. It looks like they might be breaking out from a 2-year, oh, I'm sorry, about a 4-year downtrend, right? And this gets sort of to the broad market expansion that we've been talking about, and where does that stem from? And you know, as much as I hate to say this, I think this is an offshoot of and an expansion of AI. Utility companies are going to need to produce a lot more power. It appears an AI chip takes five times the power that a non-AI chip does. Okay. And AI chips are running amok right now. So we're seeing a lot of earnings growth coming from utilities. So it's not, and typically when we see utilities start to do well and the defensive start to do well, that's when sort of my ears, that's the initial part of my ears perking up going, okay. And that's when I start to test consumer staples against consumer discretionary and said, how are they starting to perform against each other? How is the value sector starting to perform against the growth sector? Are we starting to see a shift in where capital's flowing to? And these are usually the initial signs where we're going to see maybe a material pullback in the markets. People are just starting to get defensive. They're not running to bonds or anything like that, but they're starting to get more defensive on their equities, right? This isn't that. This is a true blue, I believe, economic expansion happening in utilities because of the AI. So there's a lot of good things that are going to be coming out of this AI. And it's not just specific to NVIDIA and a few small chip companies. It's going to make a lot of things, a lot of companies more productive. And it's going to make a lot of other companies that need to provide for AI. It's going to do well for them too.
When you're talking about performance, are you talking about their actual financial performance and what they're reporting in earnings and their guidance, or are you looking at the market performance?
Both. And you can see that you can actually see that the market performance of the utilities has been really, really good the last month or so. And their earnings, they're starting to guide higher. But their earnings have not been all that. Their revenue's actually not been great, but their earnings potential is a little higher going forward. So if you look at it through the XLU, in 2020, the XLU grew by 1.2% earnings. That's it. And that's why you buy utilities. You may get 1 to 3% a year in growth, but you get a lot of cash flow from the company. So you might get a 4% yield on the money, maybe a 5% yield. So if you're getting 4 to 5% yield on the position plus 2% price growth, well, you're getting 5 or 6%. You're not taking a lot of risk, right? It's basically like take a high yield bond or utility stock, you know, right? I mean, if a high yield bond and a utility stock had an arm wrestle, well, you know, it's even money, you know what I mean? So 2021, we saw, you know, had 5.6% earnings growth. 2022 down to 3%. But then 2023, AI was introduced. Now 2021, it got 5.6%. There a lot of things happened in 2021 due to COVID. People were staying at home. There was lots, like for instance, healthcare sector, 23.7% growth in 2021 due to COVID. Okay. XLK, which is the technology sector, 35% growth in 2021 due to people staying at home and buying crap from Amazon, right? And whatever. Yeah, using Google search all day, whatever they were doing. But then in 2020, here's where it gets interesting. In 2023, healthcare saw a 20.1% reduction of earnings. COVID was over. People didn't need to run to the hospital all the time. Right. So, but utilities had a 5.4% earnings growth. Okay. It continued to expand. And that's when we got the first discussions of AI. Back, it was about this time last year we really started talking about AI. Okay. And next year guidance is 8.1. Okay. Against healthcare, which is 8.4, against technologies, which is like 15. But we're talking about utilities. We're talking about utility. Now, we're talking about the S&P 500, which is going to grow about 8.5% year over year, earnings growth. Utilities is finally holding its own with the broader market. That's why we like going into this year. It hasn't been a great trade yet, but it's just now starting to show signs that it is. We went into the equal weight sector of the S&P, or the equal weight side of the S&P instead of the market cap weighted. Normally we go into just the market cap weighted, or I'll carve out a section of it like the OEF, which is the largest 100 companies, okay? And that's what we had last year, which did really, really well. It's actually outperformed the equal weight RSP this year, okay? Because the larger companies have done much better. But we're starting to see the equal weight take hold and go. And we think the back half of the year, the RSP is going to actually, with equal weight RSP, is going to outperform the market cap weighted S&P 500. And if you look at it going back 20 years, the equal weight outperforms the market cap weighted index exactly 50% of the time. But it hasn't outperformed it in 3 years. This is testimony to a nice broadening of the market, a nice wide expansion. We're not just counting on five or six or seven companies to pull the whole market up. This is good for everybody. This is good for small businesses in the United States because there's more companies doing more revenue, employing more people. They can buy more things from more companies in the United States, and on it goes.
Well, and more competition for goods and services as well, which creates just a more efficient economy. When you're building a portfolio out, how specific or deliberate are you in how much of the portfolio is going to be comprised of individual equities and those names that you may like in particular versus just having sector exposure? How much flexibility do you give yourself on that?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a capitalist and I'm a business owner, right? And my clients need to have a menu of things that they can say yes to, period. Okay. So it's up to me. Do you remember the movie My Cousin Vinny? And they go to
Yes,
the
great
restaurant and they
movie.
can order
Great
breakfast,
movie.
lunch, or dinner. And they're like, well, I guess I'll have breakfast. You know what I mean? Okay.
I can make an argument that that's one of the top 10 movies of all time. No joke. I love
Absolutely. I don't care what anyone says. Marissa Tomei in that movie was so oddly hot. Like, I think I was 18 when that movie came out. And I was like, I think I want to move to New York. I don't know. Like,
I was 9 or so. I don't even know how old it was. I was like 9 when I saw it for the first time, and it was older then. And even at 9 years old, I was considering that.
and Joe Pesci with that Cadillac and Marissa Tomei and those little scare. Oh my God. And because I'm a car guy, when she started talking about
Oh,
the
yeah.
Chevy 2 with the doing the timing on the
Yeah.
Stanley, I'm like, that's hot.
I
That's
saw
hot.
that
If you don't
clip.
like that, if you don't think that's hot, you're a bad person.
Watch this. Because Chevy didn't make a 327 in 55. The 327 didn't come out till 62. And it wasn't offered in the Bel Air with a four-barrel carb till 64. However, in 1964, the correct ignition timing would be 4 degrees before top dead center.
that is man, we are getting so off of the investment topic.
Well, at the time, so this was high school, and I just got my 64 Mercury Comet with a 289 that I was working on and trying to make it so I could just drive it to school, but it would like get halfway down the street and flood over and catch on fire. But that's okay, I'm gonna get it to school. So I was like, yeah, you know, this is cool. What are we talking about?
I have no idea. Oh, the menu.
The menu.
Yeah, you need a menu.
So clients have different risk tolerances all across the board. So it's up to me to make sure I say, okay, we need to build out portfolios that meet everybody's need, no matter what it is. And then we have a portfolio called Safeguard at the very lowest end of risk tolerance. Okay. It's all fixing them. There's no equities in it whatsoever. Okay. And it's all ETFs. We don't use individual bonds because we use block trading here, and bond inventories with block trades doesn't really work. All the way up through our portfolio called Cerberus, which is incredibly aggressive. It's more aggressive than ARK. I think we've talked about it before. It was up like, I don't know, 70 or 80% last year. It's, you know, it moves around a lot, but it was up, you know, it had a rough year in 2022. It was down like 40, but that's what that's for. And then we have everything in between. So starting at Safeguard, we have Safeguard. From there, we have Sentinel, which is 20-80, 20% equity, 80% fixed income. Dignity, which is 40% equity, 60% fixed income. All of these are ETF-based. Then we have Wisdom. Wisdom is 60% equity, 40% fixed income. And they're called, it's Wisdom Macro. It's ETFs. But we also, this is where we introduce individual stocks. Then we have Wisdom Macro Plus, which has a couple of individual stocks inside of it. And I mean two, like Google and Amazon. A little bit of stock exposure, a little bit of alpha for those, but it still maintains at 60-40. Then we go into Prosperity, which is sort of the meat and potatoes of the firm. It's our biggest exposure between all the clients. Okay. It's probably 90% of the clients here are in one version of Prosperity or the other. We have three versions. We've got Prosperity Macro, which is all ETFs. Okay. We've got Prosperity Macro Plus, which is all ETFs, plus four stocks from the sectors that we like. Then we have Prosperity, and that is all individual stocks with the exception of the ETFs we use for the fixed income side, because again, we can't use individual bonds and block trading. So we use ETFs like the IEI or the HYG or the TLH for the fixed income side. From there, we have Focused, which is our growth portfolios, Focused Macro, Focused Macro Plus, and then Focused. And again, all individual stocks is Focused, with the exception of one ETF, I use XBI in there. And then Focus Macro Plus, which is, you know, stocks and ETFs, and then Focus Macro, which is all ETFs. That way a client can say, I want to be in a growthy portfolio, but I really don't like individual stocks. You know, I don't want that. Or I would be okay with a few Macro Plus. And that's why they're built. How they are built is based on a lot of different factors. Economics, right? So I go into the sectors. I go into sector earnings growth. Okay. So we know, and so we have guidance for 2024 that tech in 2025, tech is going to grow by 15.1% and 17.5. Okay. Trades at a multiple of 28. Okay. That's fair. So we have a 1.4% ratio there. That's fine. Utilities at 8.1% earnings growth. Materials at 4. Okay. So I start to look where the earnings growth is going to come from. Then I look at the price I'm paying for that earnings growth, and I want to make sure that ratio is good. Then from there, I look into the sector and find out where the growth is coming from in the sector. Who are the superstars? How good have they been at their guidance? How correct has their guidance been? Can we count on this? You know, and that's how we build our profile. And then we take the macro approach, the macro side. We say, okay, well, we know we have, Where are interest rates now? Where are they going? Where's GDP going? Are we slowing? Are we growing? Then we get into sort of the art of it, of putting it together in the right percentiles. And that just takes experience. So, and it's funny is we're hearing talk of, is the growth trade dead? Is the growth trade dead? You know, the consumer is starting to feel the pinch. Okay. So GDP came in at 1.6% last quarter, right? Well, if you strip out trade, came in at 3.1, which is great. Okay, fine. But let's just leave 1.6 at face value, if that's the case. So if the economy is starting to slow down, where do we want to allocate money to? That means interest rates will likely go down. So therefore, we need to allocate capital to where it is growing. And that will benefit from lower interest rates, which is where we already are. Your technologies. Now, you might want to pull back on consumer discretionary a little bit. Sure. Okay. But consumer discretionary as a sector, if you want to buy it through the XLY, right? Well, what's the biggest component of consumer discretionary? Amazon. Okay. Amazon's got great prices for lots of different things. So you don't want to take everything at its face value all the time. So although consumer discretionary, because it sounds like, oh, this is where, fancy restaurants and Teslas, there's also Amazon in there. So you have to be careful to not throw the baby out with bathwater. So in a situation like that, where if we think consumer discretionary is going to start to pull back, but Amazon's going to do well, we'll switch that sector for maybe industrials or maybe consumer staples or something like that, which I don't think consumer staples are going to do well, or something else. But we'll leave Amazon on the macro plus side, or just the individual stock side. So that's how we can be a lot more granular with the individual stock portfolios than we can with the sector base, because all of the sectors let us know where the growth is happening and how the sphere is growing. Again, the best analogy I can come up with is if every year we start with a perfect sphere, and that's the economy, and it grows by 2.5%. That sphere is not going to be exactly 2.5% larger, perfectly round. It's going to have bumps, maybe from technology and healthcare and industrials and where it grew from there. And it's going to have dents, right? It's going to be concaved in places like materials or the defensive parts of the market. And you just have to go, you have to allocate to where the bumps are going to be, and make sure you're not sitting where it's going to cave in. And that is a general rule. And I would say the best way to articulate that is, people are always saying, well, you want to try to find the winners. You want to try to pick the winners. You're trying to pick the winners, the winning sectors, the winning companies in those sectors. Yes-ish. No, mostly. What I mean by that is, the thing I try to do more than anything, and I'm not going to take credit for this. This comes from Howard Marks. Howard Marks said, I want to try to avoid the losers. I'm trying hard to. It's great to try to pick the winners, but you need to start with avoiding the losers. And then what do you have left? Right? So I want to stay away from the sectors that I think are going to go nowhere or go down. Start there. And then go into the sectors I think are, and then what's left? Okay. And I don't want to just have everything. I want to have the best of the best. And using the data that we have and the expensive research tools that we utilize, it gives us as good a shot as anybody.
Getting probably close to the end on time here, but I wanted to bring this up before we wrapped up. Yesterday, you brought up how the economic indicators, when we look at the macro landscape, they're starting to paint sort of a Goldilocks scenario where part of the reason we are at higher levels in the S&P and in the equity markets, even though interest rates themselves may be a little bit higher, is when you look down the road 6, 8, 12 months. It's starting to look like 10-year treasuries may be significantly lower down the road than where we are now. And that's part of where the equity markets are. Obviously, we all know equity markets are not digesting today's information. They're digesting 6 months, 12 months down the road information. And it's an important thing for listeners and viewers to remember too, is that what you're seeing on the news today is yesterday. That's already happened, right? The market's not. Isn't it necessarily interesting? Yeah, we're going to use what happened yesterday.
Yeah, we were buying this in September and October. So back to sort of the whole thing, right? Back to, we know we're looking about 8-9% earnings growth on S&P for the next year or two. We're looking at 19% earnings growth on the Nasdaq. Okay, and we're looking at a PCE, a core PCE at 2.7. Okay, year over year, and probably starting to cool. Okay, and then we're looking at components of CPI. Components of inflation that have been keeping a little hotter, that kept it sort of hot the first quarter, kind of came a little hotter than we thought, right? Which was shelter and auto insurance. Those were, and we're starting to see that those are cooling rapidly, specifically auto insurance. Shelter is cooling rapidly. So the lagging effects of the higher interest rates have really started to finally take hold in the shelter side. I'm not saying housing prices are going to come down. They're just not going to continue to go up as fast, right? And there's a massive difference now between rental prices and home ownership prices. And usually we don't see that. So, that lets us, that again, that's a canary in the coal mine. So there's a lot of, again, not to overuse a word here, but green shoots as far as the components of inflation that are going to start cooling, that are cooling rapidly now, and will bring, and we're going to start to see inflation really kind of revert back to where it was end of last year, where it was cooling at a pretty rapid pace. And I think that will reignite the rate cut talk, not as, because remember, if we go back a few weeks, it was like, are they actually going to raise rates again? You know, because we had a couple hot inflation ticks. In fact, Bowman even came on here today, she spoke today that she doesn't think rate cuts are warranted. So whatever Bowman says, just think the opposite. That's what's really going to happen. She is a hawk's hawk. I don't, she, you know, she, you're not supposed to live in the here and now. You're supposed to live in the future. And she should know better that the components of CPI that are keeping it hot are actually cooling pretty rapidly. And we should see that calm down. And she should say we need to be more data dependent, but she doesn't. She's just a hawk. Don't ask me why, but she is. But nonetheless, Jay Powell came out on May 1st and was very dovish. Not very dovish, but dovish, lean dovish. But he absolutely disregarded the notion of a future rate hikes. He said, no, it's highly, highly likely that the next move from the Federal Reserve will be a reduction of policy rate, not an increase of policy rate. Okay. And that's what the market, that was the other thing that changed since April 19th. Since, see what I'm saying? Now the market is feeling like the dove, or like the Fed is not hawkish, but a little dovish actually. And I think that's been sort of a tailwind for equity prices. So back to, we have good earnings growth, good demand. We know we have that, and we have a 5.5% upper bound policy rate. We have a 4.85% 2-year note and an inverted yield curve with a 4.5% 10-year. So the 10-year, I think, is going to cool. But I think the 2-year is going to cool very, very rapidly and steepen the yield curve and normalize the yield curve, which is normally not good for markets and not good for the economy, because it lets you know that the economy is cooling off too fast. But we're coming from too much demand too fast that caused both the 10-year and the 2-year to move up rapidly. It just caused the 2-year to move up much faster and much further than the 10-year did, which was what inverted the yield curve to begin with. So having the 2-year fall back through the 10-year at into more of a and it into a more a normalization of that relationship is actually good for the markets. Okay. So back to PCE being 2.7%, core PCE being 2.7% year over year, with inflation, the core components of inflation really starting to calm down. Okay. That says that this is gonna, I think we're gonna have, and I'm gonna stick with it. We said at the beginning of the year, we thought we were going to get 3 rate cuts this year. First one, probably July. I would say it's probably not going to be July, is possible. I would say we're going to get 2 or 3. First one in September, second one in December. Optional being November. July also optional, but the November being far more likely than a July, right? So my guess is we'll get 2 to 2.5, 2 maybe 3 rate cuts September and December, but the data could tell a different, the data could paint a different picture, which leads them to a different conclusion. The thing no one's talking about is, and I don't see this happening, I'm not seeing any evidence of this, if for some reason markets or economics pull back a little bit, right? That could cool a little faster and cause them to actually accelerate their cuts from one cut per meeting to more. Which could, I mean, anything can happen. I mean, we're talking about a Federal Reserve that said there's no chance we're going to be doing 3 rate hikes at a single meeting. Exactly 3 weeks later, at the very next Fed meeting in June of 2022, they raise it 75 basis points. Okay. So you have to understand that I think this, the Federal Reserve does a really good job. And I mean that. I think there's people on the Federal Reserve that probably speak outside of their competence. But I think Jay Powell, and I think for the most part, I really like Austin Goolsbee. I think he really knows his stuff. Rich Wall Waller, Christopher Waller is really sharp. You know, they're very sober with their language. They don't speak hyperbolically. And I think we're gonna see, and I really pay attention to communication from those three. So that sort of gives me a nice picture for the remainder of this year into 2025. The election might throw a bit of a curveball to some people and will cause some short-term volatility during that snapshot of time. But nonetheless, I think the market will see through it either way, no matter who wins.
Well, man, enjoyed it as always. Somewhere between Marissa Tomei and my cousin Vinny. I hope, hopefully, we got some good market information out of this thing today. But as always, if you didn't figure it out, this is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Absolutely, do not take anything that we say as investment advice of any kind, because we don't know your situation. If you are looking for investment advice, you should talk to somebody like Matt, who can be reached at
702-655-8300, or you can email us at just go to intelligentinvestment.com.
And if you're watching this on advisoradvocates.com or on YouTube, there's a link to intelligentinvestment.com, so you can schedule a call straight from there. And if you would like to talk with Matt, I highly encourage that. He knows his stuff, but do not listen to what we say just as that, because we don't know your situation. Talk to Matt, let him know more about it, and he will get you straightened out.
Thank you.
All righty, man. Thank you, dude. Had a great time. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Take it easy.
All right.